Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is AppSats Radio, help for partners after sexual betrayal. We talk about it here.
Betrayal trauma.
We are AppSats certified clinical partner specialists and coaches who have been trained to help navigate you through this crisis. There is nothing we won't talk about.
So I've got Amy on the line. Amy, welcome to the show. What's your question?
Well, I have a question about what healthy sexuality looks like when a sex addict is in recovery.
One of the things we know about research and sex addicts is that they don't necessarily want sex with their own wife. And so to me, that says he's in really good recovery because he does want that with you. He has been 2 years sober. He has been in three facilities. And I suspect that's how he's wanting closeness with you.
And I would agree with that 100%. Hi, I am Carol Jurgensen-Sheets. You know, I have a disclaimer on that. And that is that it's because oftentimes he's been looking at materials that have kept him unable to perform with a real person. So it's not about you at all, but it affects you. And so for Amy, her husband wasn't affected. He had been in good enough recovery for long enough that he really wanted to be with her and share that kind of closeness. And I know that for some, that kind of closeness may never come. And I know for others, that kind of closeness never stopped. And probably, if you're listening to the show, you know that that kind of closeness is a personal choice, and it's different for everybody. I'm Carol, the coach, and this is AppSats Radio. It is Partner Betrayal Recovery Radio, and I'm so happy to be with you today. We've got a good show. We have a man who wants to come on and talk about how sex addicts typically heal. And he uses something called experiential therapy because he really believes that it's important to, if you will, it's very, very important to feel the feelings, deal with the issues, and do that experientially so that it not only employs his mind, but also his body. So I can't wait to talk about that. You know, this is a tough week, right? We just had Valentine's Day. And Valentine's Day can be tough because it represents something that is not. Now, you heard me say last Thursday that lots of couples end up fighting over Valentine's Day, and they have had no history of infidelity in their life. So it's tough for all couples, or well, for most couples. In part, it has to do with the expectations. I was talking to a client today, and she said she wanted to work on her flaws. And she said that she wanted to stop controlling out of fear. And when I probed a little bit harder, she said that her expectations are out of control. She wants things a certain way, and when they don't happen in that way, it causes tension in the relationship. Can you relate? I think we all do that, whether we're partners or whether sex addiction has been part of our life. But truly, when you're in a relationship with somebody else, you have expectations. Her story was a public one. He was in politics. They worked very closely together. She was as well known as he. And then it came out that he had several affairs. And everybody dropped them like hot potatoes. Now, the truth of the matter is, many of their professional colleagues and friends came back into her life, but refused to come back into his. So that was some more collateral damage that occurred to the, because if you've got a group of friends and colleagues that you feel comfortable with, and then they no longer spend time with you, you're grieving the loss of another thing. You know, you are counting your losses, if you will. It's not just the loss of what you had with your partner, but it's the loss of what you had with your community. And that is really rough. And so then what do you do about that, right? How do you reckon with that, as Brené Brown would say? And what I wanted her to do is I wanted her to identify what she wished she could have in her life. And oftentimes asking a partner what she needs is really, really tough. Because other than the obvious, they're not quite sure. You know, they want closeness with their husband again, but they don't know how close. They don't know if that involves sex. They're not sure if they're ready to take vacations together. You know, they may want check-ins and more communication in their coupleship. And yet they secretly resent, if you will, the fact that the husband hasn't initiated the check-in when it's so important to her. And so already she's a bit blocked because not sure that she likes the process because he didn't initiate it. So if you had to identify your needs, could you write 10 of them out? Could you do that naturally without having to ponder? Could you just kind of make that association and just start scribbling 10 of your needs for yourself? And I'm going to ask you, as you think about that, you might want to break those down into your social needs, your intellectual needs, your emotional needs, your spiritual needs, your physical needs, and I always end with your purposeful needs, because ultimately, moving full circle from partner betrayal to post-traumatic growth means that you, on some level, make the choice to give back. It doesn't necessarily have to be give back to partners, although many, many, many women do that. It may be that you give back to your church's Sunday school. It may be that you give back to COVID relief. It may be that you are just the best person possible and give back with kindness. You know, I'm Carol the Coach, and I have this Carol the Coach-ism. And that ism is that I believe you pick a word in January, and then you live by that word for the whole year. You know, if you pick the word communication, maybe what you end up doing is you work on communicating more with all that you know, with everyone you meet. And it may look like, if it's fitness, that you commit to putting fitness into your life every single day. Country has been through some horrible weather lately, and we're in the Midwest, and it's 7 below, and I have had to use my elliptical and my treadmill. Now, I know some of you would kill for that, But I like being outside. I like nature. So as I was walking up to my elliptical, I was grumbling. And I was like, I hate this. I want to enjoy the beautiful snow, and I want to. And then I said, Carol, shift that energy, for goodness sakes, and be grateful. Be grateful that you have those two pieces of machinery that you can use when it is sub-zero weather. And I'll tell you what, that shifted how I experienced that workout. Now, I'll tell you a secret. My word is kind. I am a very kind person, unless you're Comcast or you're the, it could be anybody that where I'm having trouble and you're not able to help me, and I get that tone of voice that on some level intimates that you're not good enough. And I said, I am shifting that behavior this year. So I would ask you, just in the same way as I gave you homework last week, I'd ask you to come up with a word that you would like to incorporate into the rest of 2021 and put it places you can see it and feel it, use it, and believe it. Because it's all about us being the best people that we can possibly be. And that's one of the exciting things about talking with Mike Vaughn. He is a therapist that uses experiential therapy to unlock the doors to healing. And he's going to help us understand how he uses that with addicts. So welcome, Mike, to Partner Betrayal Recovery Radio. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much, Carol, for having me.
Well, you're welcome. And you know, working in the business of sex addiction, sex addicts are always wanting more information about what will move them further on their journey to healing and to good self-esteem. And then their partners are on that same bandwagon, sometimes wanting it more for them than they would even for themselves. So I want to ask you, how did you first find out about experiential therapy, and what made you decide that this was a therapy that you thought would be very helpful for sex addicts?
Yeah, great question. So as is probably often the case for many of us, no matter what it is that we're talking about, I was first introduced to experiential therapy through a friend. He practiced experiential therapy, and we were closely connected and still are. And, I was doing very traditional therapy, which I still do and love, but I was doing traditional therapy at that time. And, he said, you should – I was talking to him about something I don't recall now. This has been so many years ago, but he said, you know what? There's this type of therapy that I've been trained in, that I've been doing, that's been really incredible. You should check into it. And of course, it was experiential therapy. And, so I Googled it, and I didn't really have any idea what it meant and what it was. And so I Googled it and figured out, like, I went to where he went to get trained in it. And I went to the training, and, you know, really honestly, within the first probably hour or two of the training in experiential therapy, it was just so obvious to me how powerful of a form of therapy that this was. In any good training, I think, especially in the therapeutic world, we often practice on each other, right? So we were learning these principles, and then we would apply them and practice with one another, you know, all guided by the instructor. And it just was really amazing to me. And so he was the introduction. I went for training. And as I did that, I did a couple different types of training around it and started to use it in my practice. It really solidified it for me, because it became obvious quickly to me that this is a powerful form of therapy. And it's a great adjunct to the more traditional types of therapy. I mean, I flow in and out of them. I use them all. This I have found to be really, really important for some of those places that are difficult to get to with other types of therapy.
And so talk about, if you will, some of those places that are difficult to get to.
Yeah, so the chief of that, maybe amongst those, is trauma, right? So, you know, that word I think has different meanings for different people. Sometimes I'll use the language around just negatively impactful events. We're not going to get through this life and not have negative experiences. We all know that. And things that honestly cause us to get stuck. A lot of those happen when we're younger, and then they're compounded by experiences as we grow and as we're adults. And so, you know, I think for any of us, we can find ourselves in spots around various issues where we really are just kind of frozen, right? We're moving on in life, but we're not necessarily moving forward. And I think that those are really, really two different things. And so I have found experiential therapy to be really powerful as a way to access some of those places that people are stuck, particularly around trauma or negative experiences, that maybe talking about those things doesn't access as easily.
Okay, and so obviously, you know, experiential therapy seems like something that can unlock the door, if you will, to maybe childhood issues or trauma that's happened that maybe someone might have the tendency to minimize. Tell me a little bit. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say I totally agree. I think I love your word there. I think unlock is one of the most predominant themes when it comes to experiential therapy, because it truly is that it really can be at times an unbelievable experience. Really a person is able to access and unlock this place that's been really shut down for so long. So I appreciate you saying that, because I think that that's probably precisely what experiential therapy does in so many ways.
Okay, so can you give our listening audience some ideas or examples of clients that have used experiential therapy and how it has navigated their life?
Sure. There are so many. And maybe what I'll start really quickly with is just a brief kind of maybe quick overview of what it really is. So experiential therapy is essentially, it's a therapy technique that it's more activities and movement based. It's expressive in that way. So it's not uncommon with experiential therapy when you have the space to have clients kind of moving about the room, sitting in different chairs. You know, art is part of that, sometimes drawing something as opposed to writing it down. And even writing things can be that too. So that's what we're talking about when we talk about experiential. There's so many different things underneath that. But sure, there are lots of examples. So one of the ones that I often will start with when I'm educating people about this is something that a lot of people are familiar with, and that's called the empty chair technique. Many therapists use this, even, you know, if they have experiential training or not. And it's, the empty chair technique is simply, you know, you have a couple chairs set up. A client then places another person, and sometimes it's an event, but often it's a person in that chair. Now, obviously, that other person's not there, but they really imagine them there, and they have a conversation with them. Sometimes it's maybe more of just them telling that person the things that they needed to say to them. Sometimes they speak and you know, they hear back. It's more like a dialogue. And, you know, I will often use something to personify that person in the chair. So I might use a pillow or a scarf or something just to help get into that place. But that's a simple one that I think, you know, my experience with clients is when I introduce something like that, they say, what? First of all, what in the world are you talking about? And I don't know if I can do that. And then I say, well, you know what? If you're willing, just start talking. And if it's not really connecting with you, it's fine. Not a big deal. We'll try something different. And it's amazing pretty much all of the time once a person begins how they're really back in that place in a healthy way, having that conversation that they needed to have at whatever time in their life they needed to have it. And so that's a simple technique. but one that can be really profound and impactful, but one that also I've found a lot of people kind of already know. I think it's been out there maybe long enough, but that's just a good example.
Well, that really is a good example, and I suspected that was experiential because clearly that isn't a person just talking about their pain or their trauma or their feelings. That's a person telling another person the trauma that's been caused, and that's a whole different effect
right.
on the mind and the body, right?
It is a whole different effect. It really is, and that I think is the important part of what experiential does. You know, like in experiential therapy, what we say is a little adage, we say that basically wounds happen through experience, and so healing happens through experience. Right? I mean, certainly people can say things to us that are extremely impactful to us and negatively so, but so often it's experiences. And we experience it with our whole body. It's our whole being. It's not just our mind, it's our body as well. And so what experiential therapy does is it looks to access the whole person. So it's a kind of a holistic approach to whatever the issue is. You know, maybe it's trauma, maybe it's anxiety or depression or some of these other things, and especially, of course, addiction, which is one of the things that we're focusing on today. So I like it because I think that it involves our body. And our body, I mean, listen, when we start out this life, you know, for the first 18 months to 2 years, we really communicate mostly just with our body. We don't have language to tell people what's going on. And so we find ways, you know, to communicate. And, you know, that continues through our whole lifespan. We communicate so much with our bodies in the way that we stand or in the, you know, the muscles of our face, the smile. Now, of course, these days it's super hard with masks to know what people are communicating. But, you know, and I think that's the part about experiential is that it involves and invokes our entire bodies in the healing process, because truly our entire self is impacted by traumatic things.
Well, and if you would tell our listening audience, what kind of impact or effects or symptoms occur when sex addicts connect to their trauma?
Yeah. So there are a range of things. So when sex addicts are really doing their deeper work, oftentimes there are many physiological symptoms that occur. So I've had clients who, even in the office, like they come in and they're fine and we start working on some things and they'll have a headache, for example, that starts. Or they become very sleepy, right? And so then as you go through the process and then towards the end of the session, they'll say, oh, gosh, that headache is gone. That's really weird. Or, gosh, I was so tired as we were working on that, but now I have regular energy again. And so those are easy examples. Those happen quite frequently. Sometimes I think as we're doing trauma work outside the office, it can induce dreams of various kinds, you know, kind of further processing. So things like that are very common. And, you know, I think on a different level, it's not uncommon certainly to experience a range of emotions as well. And that can be expressed through the body also, right? So anxiety levels maybe sometimes go up and then, you know, kind of see more foot tapping or moving legs or just kind of that energy that comes from that. So those are just a few ideas of what I see in the office.
Absolutely. And, you know, I know that partners and addicts alike take on a lot of trauma just from the betrayal. And for the addicts that I work with, mm-hmm. if they're in good recovery, it is traumatic to watch that collateral damage that their wives mm-hmm. are dealing with. And so they're in a state of trauma much of the time. And, you know, that includes, you know, chest and heart palpitations and anxiety mm-hmm. and inability to sleep, some insomnia. You talked about, I think, before, restless leg syndrome. I mean, the body mm-hmm. keeps score of
it does
It does. And so I'm excited about experiential therapy. And the empty chair has been around for probably at least 30 years. Would you agree?
I agree. I don't know that what I'm about to say is true, but I would suspect it's probably one of the earliest and probably first of the techniques, at least that became more widely known. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so can you give us another example of another type of experiential therapy treatment?
Absolutely. So this is one I bet, Carol, that you use too potentially. And so almost with all clients, particularly though with the sex addicts that I work with, I will do a trauma egg with them, which is basically, it's a, you know, kind of get a big piece of paper and you actually draw an oval. That's why we call it an egg. But the key with this and what makes it experiential is that it's actually a drawn exercise. And so we often have to say, listen, it's not about the artwork. It's just about the process of drawing this instead of speaking it. Because what we know about something, for example, like drawing, is that it's accessing different parts of the brain than if we're just talking about that same exact event. And so I'll have clients kind of go through their history and draw those kind of representations of those things that have been really impactful to them. And that process is interesting because I think the nature of just doing the drawing part, again, going back to what you said earlier, that can so often unlock not only pieces and parts of those experiences that maybe they had put away for a long time, knew that they were there but had put them away, but I think it also is very much part of their release process. And then, you know, I will have clients walk through that egg with me, and so that's usually more talking about it, but they've already gone through the experiential piece of drawing it. So that's a common, very classic one that a lot of people use. I use it. I find it to be exceptionally helpful to form the basis a lot of times for what does the rest of the work need to look like? So what do we need to do after this? It really sets up the structure for the work really well, I've found. And so that's an example of an experiential technique. And what makes it experiential really is the drawing part because of really what it's accessing in the brain. And so I have many of those. I'm happy to share more if you would like, but that is one example anyway.
Well, you know, I love the fact that you talked about that because I have my partners draw pictures of picking a metaphor today and how they want to feel 5 years from now. And you're exactly right. When we ask people to draw, if they're willing, it accesses a different part of the brain and it also plants the seed of whatever the goal is. And so I have had many a woman be crumpled over in the floor after just finding out Discovery, and she just draws herself as if she's the living dead. And then 5 years from now, she's on a mountain, flexing her arm, feeling strong, steady, and bold. And, you know, I've had other women draw themselves like a gerbil on a wheel, going around and around and around. And then the next metaphor, 5 years down the road, is walking down a field with daisies, and you can see that they're enjoying life again. And I really do believe in that artwork. Now, you and I both know that some people are pretty self-conscious about their drawing skills, and so I always encourage them to use stick figures if they want. I mean, that is what the trauma egg is all about, and I'm sure you've used the trauma egg, right?
I have. I mean, you know, I will, the art part of that can hang people up. And so I myself personally have done my own trauma egg. It was a super helpful part of my healing process. And so it's all stick figures. I'm a horrible artist. My 11-year-old is a far better artist than me. And so I'll usually pull out my trauma egg actually just to show that, hey, it's not about the art. It's about the process, right? Like, that's the important part, is that as you're going through the process, it's not how you're doing it. It's the fact that you're stepping into it and your brain is more fully and your body is more fully engaging it. And so as you draw those things, we also, I think it's important to say, as we do any of these types of things, techniques, we want to be really aware of what is my experience even as I go through the process, let alone when I finish and I talk about it at whatever length. But even as I'm going through the process, what is it bringing up? Because often going back again to the unlocking, it really brings those things to the surface. And that's rich. I think there's so much that we can do with that. And it's that process of self-discovery that's that critical component of recovery.
You know, I get that. And you're talking best practice in terms of any homework, any assignment, any technique that we use with a client. And oftentimes what I will do is when they do something experiential, I then have them identify what feeling word would they give that experience. And then I have them identify where they feel it the most in their body. And then I ask them, I do something called the presupposition. And I presuppose that something is going to be different in their life now that they've done this work. And if they could come back for the next session and let me know what was different, it really gives them permission to not only see themselves differently, but this will come as no surprise to you, experience themselves differently. What do you think?
I love that. And it is so true. I think in this way, these techniques, I mean, what we're really talking about right now is hope, right? These techniques help us understand that while we are in maybe a difficult place right now, there is every reason to have hope. And that is, I mean, as people anywhere, that is what we all need. It is what keeps us moving forward. It is the most, it is really the worst thing to live in a place without hope. And so I really like what you're saying, because I think that using any of these techniques to help just forecast what just on the other side of this could look like and the strength that I'm going to marshal to get there. But the fact that I am going to get there, I think is extremely powerful. And that produces hope, which is what we need.
100%. And you're right. Hope is essential in moving forward. And I believe with addiction, as well as partner betrayal, there needs to be some hope that there is a forward. And I don't know what you think about this, but I truly believe that we want people to really stay in the moment, stay very present to what is before them, but at the same time remain positive that good things are going to come to them if they're doing the next right thing. I believe that experiential therapy works for all people.
I do. I really do. I think it works for all people, and I think that it works for most issues, if not all issues. Now, you know, of course, as we have our best practices, as you say, as therapists, I think timing is everything. And, you know, I think that a client being ready for different techniques is important. So, you know, we use our clinical judgment that way. But I really believe as a blanket statement that absolutely experiential therapy is such a broad, it's such a broad modality. There's so many things that can be experiential in nature, really simple things. And I can certainly give more examples of that. But I think that because of that, it has application everywhere for everyone. I mean, I think that often if I get any resistance at all, which is really rare, but if I get any resistance, it's usually that my adult clients don't think maybe they have enough imagination or that they're going to be able to really kind of settle into it and that it's going to work in that way. And usually what I've found with that, I kind of referenced this earlier, is just that, well, if we just get started, I think you'll see, I usually tell them, I think you'll see that this is probably easier than you think. Because you know what? Our bodies and our minds, we're ready to be healed. We're ready to take those steps. And so, you know, most often those clients even that have a little fear or trepidation, they typically take to it really well. And because there is such a broad range of experiential techniques, you know, you can start with simple, basic things and work your way out from there. So, yeah, I really think that it has an application for most, if not all, issues and all people. I really do.
Well, that's interesting because I know that there are certain people that it's almost as if they are so brain locked into the trauma and the pain that they don't think they can do anything that's going to move it. And so I always say, this is a paradox because you've come into my office to figure out how to feel better, and yet you are convincing me that you don't think there's anything that would make a difference. And so you're saying, yes, you do believe if you use these experiential techniques, and maybe you start out with some of the smaller ones and then move up to some of the bigger ones, that it leaves them with hope, and it also moves them even when they don't think that's possible.
That's right. I actually really appreciate clients that are in that place that you're talking about because, you know, they're usually the clients that have the biggest impacts when it comes to experiential therapy. And so, you know, for a client that sits down in my office that might be in that place, I'll say, that's fine. Why don't we just do this then? Why don't you just go to the whiteboard and just let's just have you draw your family growing up, right? But not draw them in picture form. Let's just what we call family Adam, right? Let's just almost make an Adam of them, and you just show me where everyone was in relation to each other, right? But just, you know, kind of with the board and with the markers. And something that's simple, which is extremely, it's benign. It's usually not triggering to most as far as the actual process itself is concerned. You know, it can really help you stand back from the board, and then you look at how, you know, close a mother and a sister was, but gosh, I just realized I was way outside the family Adam. And it's powerful just to see something like that. And I think that's the point, is that I'm not necessarily talking about complex techniques. And that's the beauty of it, is that it's not in the complexity. It's sometimes actually in the simplicity, but these things are really powerful because we are using all of ourself, and it's all of ourself usually is engaged in this process, and that's where really I think the power and the healing come. So, you know, there are very simple ways to start that are pretty non-threatening, and then it can work out from there.
Well, you know, I had time that I worked in a rural setting, and I wanted a woman to deal with her anger in a very physical way that was safe. And for our listening audience, I mean, there are many, many ways to do this, but I decided to go out and buy a plastic bat, you know, one of those plastic bats with a wiffle ball. And I took her in the car, and we went out into the middle of the country. I found a big oak tree. I really don't know if it was oak, but that's what I'd say. And I asked her, I brought gloves so that she didn't hurt her hands, and I asked her if she would be willing to beat the tree, and with every stroke, she was to let her father know how angry she was that she had been abused. And so, you know, first, I actually had talked to her about this earlier, but at first she was nervous about it. I mean, she was not a timid woman, but to physicalize that kind of energy when she actually was she had really stuffed it in many ways, and it was eating at her. So she began to hit the tree, and with every hit, she referenced one more reason that he had betrayed her. And all of a sudden, I look up, and here comes a man on a tractor. And he's driving up to us, and I say, okay, we better put the bat down. And she says, oh, I bet this is his tree. And I said, yeah, you know what? I may have made a mistake here. I didn't get permission to hit the tree with you, and so I'll take full responsibility. You can go back to the car. And she said, no, I'll hang with you. And I go, okay. So he comes up and he goes, what are you little ladies doing? You know, this was the sweetest farmer in the world. Mm-hmm. This was back in the 80s. And I said, well, I've got a client here who's very angry, and she's using your tree to break her bat. And he said to me, well, you go right ahead. I'm glad to see that she's got a focus and she's got a mission, and it's okay with me. You can't hurt that tree. And I said, thank you, sir. And I looked at her and I go, do you want to continue? And she says, oh, yes, I am going to break this bat. Well, the truth of the matter is it's very difficult to break one of those big plastic bats with
yes.
the big steam. But she was exhausted, and she wrote about it every night that week. And when she came back to see me, she said, you know, I really feel it was my anger that was holding me back. And now I feel like I've let it go. I've exhausted the anger inside of me. And very much, that was experiential therapy. But I wouldn't recommend using somebody else's property without permission.
We'll put that disclaimer in there.
Yeah,
absolutely.
No, that was experiential. It was experiential. And I think what I appreciate as a therapist about experiential therapy is that since so many things fall under this kind of banner, I just have found it to, for me, unlock just so much creativity in my work. Because, you know what, you really and truly can't go wrong. There are a few things in life that you just can't go wrong almost no matter what you do. And I think when, you know, done in safe ways and with all the proper boundaries, you really cannot go wrong with experiential therapy. Because every part of it, regardless of what the kind of outcome was when you or the belief about the outcome was when you started, every part of it is, I've found, a really helpful part if you're aware of the process itself. And so, you know, yeah, I think the creativity part, but also it's really interesting for clients, I think, to experience those creative parts of them as well. Because sometimes as adults, we don't think we're very creative unless it was just so obviously creative. And so I appreciate you sharing that. Yeah, that's a great example of experiential therapy. It is that. And, you know, it can be like that, and it can also be sitting in a different chair in the office, or, you know, putting on a scarf and taking off a scarf, or holding a stack of books like I sometimes do with sex acts, you know, to kind of experience the weight of addiction. Like these really, so many different things, but just it's involving more of the person. And so that's why I appreciate it so much.
Well, I appreciate you, and I can't thank you enough for sharing these techniques, because it reminds people that it's not always all about talk therapy, and that there are other ways to work through issues. Now, if people wanted to get a hold of you or learn more about you, how could they do that?
Yeah, a bunch of different ways. So I have a website. It's www.counselingpracticecoach.com. That's a way that you can get in touch with me. There's a different website. That's surehopecounseling.com. That's separate way. And then I also have a podcast with a friend and fellow therapist. That's called the Inner Process Podcast, and that website is theinnerprocesspodcast.com. And we talk about a lot of the topics that we address with clients. So anxiety and acceptance
and how to get unstuck and how to change. And so these types of things. And so we're trying to be helpful in that way. So there are a myriad of ways that people can find me and get in touch with me if they want to do that. And I would welcome that very much.
Well, very good. And one more time, your podcast is The Inner Experience?
It's The Inner Process Podcast. Yeah, and the website is theinnerprocesspodcast.com.
Okay, so they can get to it by accessing that website.
They can, and we're on Apple, iTunes and Spotify and all anywhere that people listen to podcasts. If they just search either my name or The Inner Process Podcast, they will find us. Yeah.
Got it. All right. Well, thank you again for sharing that information. And I'm going to start listening to your podcast. I really look forward to it.
Well, thank you for that. And thank you so much, Carol, for having me. And I really appreciate this podcast. It is an immensely helpful podcast for our community and the recovery community and the partners community. So you are doing great work here. And it has been very much an honor to be part of it.
Okay. I so appreciate that. And you make it a good week. And we'll talk soon.
You too. Thanks a lot.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye. You know, you can really tell that he is somebody who's very comfortable talking to the public, and I'm not surprised he has a podcast, The Inner Process, and I hope to talk with him again soon. Now, if you were struggling with Valentine's Day because you had some expectations that didn't get met, it's just important to communicate that to the person that you wanted more from. And I got to tell you that sometimes they don't know what to do because there's so much shame about the day that they do the fight, flight, or freeze, and they freeze. So just in the same manner that my word is kind, and I'm going to work on being kinder, I want you to pick a word that will help you to move through these extraordinary circumstances in a way that's less harmful for you. Okay. I will talk to you soon, and as I say, there will only be one of you at all times. I do want you fearlessly to have the courage to be yourself. We'll talk next week for more Betrayal Recovery Radio. That's APSATS.org.